Okay, well, it's wonderful to be here, and I've met some wonderful new friends who I think I'll know for a long time, I have a feeling, already, and it's also wonderful to see the building complete and see Perimeter come to life. I'd like to start with a story in my own field in which very recently some phenomena that we thought could be described by unchanging laws turned out to require changing laws. And that has to do, and it's not as fundamental as physics, but it has to do with human perception. So about a quarter century ago, we built the first virtual reality machines that would house multiple people at once. And so these are machines that cover the sense organs, and you've probably seen them in science fiction where you have goggles and gloves and weird suits. And the notion was to study how people perceive the world in each other. And so we would make measurements about such things as how rapidly the world would have to respond as you turned your head in order for the illusion that it's stationary outside of you to work. So an interesting thing that started happening is our results were not replicable. That it turned out that there was a population growing among the graduate students and other likely people that showed up in these tests around the world that had already had enough experience in the systems that they were learning and changing in response to their previous experiences and previous tests. And so we started to see the powers of human perception change. Upon further research, it became clear that in the past century, there have been many examples of human perception changing rather dramatically because of exposure to media technologies. So for instance, I can tell some funny anecdotes about this. One of the funniest ones is in the original era of commercial photography, there was a phenomenon of itinerant photographs selling generic photographs of people that matched certain sort of archetypal images, like a big guy with a beard or something like that. And the notion was that if you bought a photograph of somebody who looked a little like a loved one, that was a closer likeness at lower cost than hiring a bad artist to sketch them. So it actually was treated as a likeness. Many other examples, repeated experiments, well-controlled, in which early subjects weren't able to distinguish a live opera singer from a wax recording from behind a curtain. None of these things would be true today. So the interesting question to me is, why would anybody have assumed anything other? Why did we assume a constancy where there wasn't one? And in retrospect, it was a silly assumption. So I think the reason that there was even the possibility of making an assumption of constancy was a metaphor drawn from a misunderstanding of computation. And it goes like this. Starting in the mid-20th century, a metaphor arose for the human being in which one might think of the brain as being like a computer, the eyes as being like cameras, and the ears as being like microphones. And that's a system that one would think would have fairly fixed properties, fixed levels of discrimination and resolution. Now, that's probably a false metaphor. It's probably a useless metaphor. A better metaphor is the head as a spy submarine sent into this weird environment of reality, performing little experiments all the time, trying to refine better and better models of what's out there. And you perform these little experiments by tiny subconscious movements of your head, for instance. I said that I thought it was an improper understanding of computation. And what I mean by that is that computation is precisely the non-eternal aspect of formal thinking. It's what's beyond analysis that really has a sort of a implied temporal history, because it took a certain number of steps to get to a certain point, and it might continue in the future with different results. And an interesting thing about computation is that it's always messy, it's always dynamic, even though we wish to think of computation as something that can be extremely orderly and clean. If we really could predict it so well, we could do analysis instead. And computation is the thing that ends up rudely surprising us as often as not. Now, I'll say more during the course of the day about better ways to think about computation and how it can have an implication for fundamental laws. But I just want to add one very other brief note, which is that if we're giving up one style of rigor, which is the notion of these absolute laws, we should be careful to replace it with something else that's equally rigorous. And I think that needs a special mention right now, because at least in the environment in the United States, there are fewer and fewer friends left for the rigor of science. And as we see with the intelligent design movement, they're ready to pounce on any reconsideration of the current rigor of science. So between the short-term thinking of the financial world and government and the sort of soft thinking of the New Age and then the hardline fundamentalist thinking of many of the religions, it's harder and harder to enforce the idea of science as having its own rigor. So when we question our own rigor, we better be careful that what we're really doing is promoting alternate rigors and not just giving an opening to people who want to question the scientific enterprise.
Okay.